It could be an infringement on freedom of speech if our case is established.
Democracy activists on trial in Hong Kong. It's Tuesday, November 20th. This is VOA Asia. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. You'll also find us on Facebook at VOA Asia. Coming up, the U.S. pushback on China at APEC. Another no-confidence vote is called in Sri Lanka. Mumbai cleans its beaches. New weights and measures. Seattle's pop culture enshrined. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Nine democracy activists in Hong Kong are on trial on charges stemming from the nonviolent Occupy movement of civil disobedience in 2014 that paralyzed the city nearly 80 days from September through December. Three of them, law professor Benny Tai, sociology professor Chan Kim Man, and retired pastor Chu Yu Ming, pleaded not guilty Monday to charges of conspiracy to commit public nuisance, incitement to commit public nuisance, and incitement to public nuisance. Each charge carries a maximum sentence of 7 years in prison. Chan Kim Man called the charges unprecedented and said they are more serious than the charge of unlawful assembly used in the past.
I guess I've been prepared for this for quite a while, so I'm not nervous about it. But I think the consequence can be quite serious in terms of civil rights and also the situation of the opposition force in Hong Kong. Because the evidence now they used to prosecute us are mainly our public speeches in different communities, on radio stations. And so it could be an infringement on freedom of speech if our case is established. And they also implicate that there are other people involved in the conspiracy charge. They include people who are picket, volunteer, and supporters of the movement. It means that it can cover 1 million people. Of course, it will include all the pro-democracy leaders in town. So once our case is established, they can use this case to purge the whole oppositional force in Hong Kong.
The Occupy campaign was viewed as the biggest populist challenge to China's Communist Party leadership since the pro-democracy demonstrations in Beijing's Tiananmen Square brutally suppressed in 1989. Hundreds of thousands took part in the closure of major roadways. Felix Patrick Keefe is president of the Australian Institute for International Affairs. He tells VOA's Victor Beatty he fears the territory, which reverted to Chinese rule from Britain in 1997, is headed toward blanket authoritarianism.
Unless I'm very, very mistaken, the courts on this occasion will probably throw the book on these more mature and more experienced political players. They've been kept out of the political arena for 4 years since the pro-democracy demonstrations, and now they are going to be put away probably for another 7 years, at least. It's a bad time for Hong Kong. One of the people that's being tried, Benny Tai, was a professor of law, says that basically the way in which China has observed the one country, two systems has not been in any way a decent way in the spirit of the agreement. And I tend to agree with him.
Just last week, Financial Times journalist Victor Mallet was barred from the city after helping host an independence activist at the Foreign Correspondents Club.
Yes, indeed. Not only that, but barred from residence and then later barred from entry, which is taking it a little bit too far, I think, even for an authoritarian regime to say that one can't enter a free port where people can actually get a visa at the desk is going a little too far in terms of actually cracking down on people that the regime in Beijing tends not to like.
Felix, last week, the U.S.-China Economic and Security Review Commission warned in a report to the Congress that China has, quote, ramped up its interference toward Hong Kong and, quote again, closed down the political space for pro-democracy activists to express discontent. Do you agree with that view?
Entirely. They're closing the trap on all of the people who perhaps have a dissonant view of politics in Hong Kong. And the fact that it's heading in different directions, as you quite rightly pointed out, that Mallet, the Financial Times Asian editor, was first of all banned from living there and then secondly banned from entering, is one side of it. The trial of these leaders, the mature leaders of the protest movement in 2013-14, if that turns into something that is really quite punitive by way of sentencing, then that's another side to it. There are all manner of things going on in the Legislative Council and Executive Council where opponents are being turfed out and not being allowed to run again, even. You know, when you take all of those things into consideration, it is really a vice that's tightening almost on a daily basis, which is really quite disturbing, actually.
Felix, Patrick Keefe said for those with the foresight and means to do so, they have the necessary travel documents and, after making sufficient money in Hong Kong, will eventually emigrate. He said the real tragedy will be for those who don't have the ability to leave the territory and will have no choice but to remain behind and keep quiet. These are among some of the top Asia stories that you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. Guilty verdicts mark the start of the end for Cambodia's genocide trial. Hong Kong protest leaders warn of threat to civil rights. North Korean weapon test demonstrates Pyongyang's resolve. Australia marks one-year anniversary of landmark gay marriage vote. China cracks down on Uyghurs. Expanded coverage of these stories and much more can be found on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also, we invite you to stop by the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. For the first time, members attending the 21-member Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation Forum in Papua New Guinea did not release a joint communique against the backdrop of rising trade and security tensions between the United States and China. Host Prime Minister Peter O'Neill promised a chairman statement at some point, even as he tried to paint a positive view of the Port Moresby meeting.
Amidst all the global challenges and economic conditions that we are facing today, there are new challenges, and the APEC leaders recognize that. The APEC leaders also recognize the rising tensions between the trading countries around the world, particularly on goods and services that have been traded between each other. But APEC leaders continue to focus on the efforts about trying to reduce inequalities, focus on making sure there is economic diversification and working together so that we can remove trade barriers so that we can drive growth and ensuring prosperity for our people.
At issue is the future role and reform of the 29-year-old World Trade Organization, which is supposed to govern global trade. Mr. O'Neill said APEC has no authority over the WTO. Grant Newsham, a senior research fellow at the Japan Forum for Strategic Studies, tells VOA for the first time an American administration is pushing back over China's economic and trade practices.
What you're seeing is the Americans finally standing up and setting down a marker for their position in Asia, for their interests, and also the interests of their friends and countries that would like to be friends of the United States. This is the first administration, really, that's ever done this. The Americans have spoken in very clear terms about their vision of a sort of a free, open Indo-Pacific, implicitly, not subject to Chinese domination. And they've been very clear, finally, about standing up to Chinese unfair trade practices, which have been going on forever, but which both American administrations and most American businessmen have been willing to overlook in hopes of getting access to the Chinese market. This administration has taken a different approach, and I think we saw it reflected at the APEC meeting and at the ASEAN meeting in Singapore recently. However, China is on a roll. Certainly their economic power, their increasing military power, and their diplomatic power and effort put them in a position where they are not so inclined to back off. So you're seeing two powerful countries sort of going head-to-head at the APEC meeting, and I think that was reflected in the absence of a sort of a final communique. Has it outlived its usefulness? No, I don't think so. Organizations always go through these kind of stages where they operate in the context of members and participants not getting along very well, and this will play itself out. But I think APEC remains a useful forum, not least because it's economic focus rather than security. So it is a place where certainly the Americans can make their position like known, like-minded countries can do the same, and even create an informal sort of opposition to Chinese efforts to dominate the region. At the same time, China has a forum to demonstrate that it has a better thing to offer.
Grant Newsham says the absence of both President Trump and Russian President Vladimir Putin did not necessarily impact the meeting.
Whenever the president comes, they say it's significant, but whenever he doesn't come, they say it's significant too. I don't really think so. It would be nice if President Trump would make a visit to Oceania, pay some attention to these countries, particularly in the South Pacific, Central Pacific. But the president is busy, and he can't attend everything. So there's always sort of undue significance attached to a president attending or not attending these sorts of meetings.
He adds the strong rhetoric and languages shows growing divisions between the United States and China.
This is an administration that is going to stand up for what it sees as U.S. interests, finally. And it's going to stand up militarily, economically, diplomatically. And it's got some friends to help him out here. Japan and Australia, for example, are like-minded. But at the same time, China is not in a mood to back down. It is not going to be resolved easily, and I think that's where the APEC meeting is particularly instructive.
Grant Newsham said the tensions that surfaced at APEC raised the stakes at the G20 meeting later this month in Argentina, featuring a one-on-one between Presidents Donald Trump and China's Xi Jinping. He envisions a difficult and long-term struggle that will at best only result in token concessions by either side in the near term. Happening now in Asia, the death of child boxer Anuncha Taseko has sparked a countrywide debate in Thailand over outlawing child fighting, leading the Ministry of Tourism and Sports to place restrictions on competitive matches. The 13-year-old died of a brain hemorrhage after a Muay Thai match. You'll find more online at VOA 60. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad to have you with us today on VOA Asia. Sri Lanka's president has called for a third parliamentary no-confidence vote on the new administration of Prime Minister Mahinda Rajapaksa, named after the removal of the previous prime minister October 26th, which sparked last month's constitutional crisis. The first two no-confidence motions were voice votes held in raucous sessions pitting supporters of both men against each other. The Sri Lankan leader wants a roll call or electronic vote on the matter. Australian National University economics professor Premachandra Arthakurala tells VOA the president has two reasons for calling for a third no-confidence vote.
He says the way the no-confidence motion was moved was not in line with the parliamentary procedures. And secondly, now he's saying that even if the no-confidence motion against the Rajapaksa majority support, still there is no indication that Wickremesinghe's party has majority in the parliament. Now, you can see Sri Lanka has been having a huge foreign debt crisis, not because of the policies of the new government over the last 3 years, but because of Rajapaksa regime's reckless borrowing from China and as well as from foreign bond markets. Total debt due 2019 is going to be over $3 billion to China.
Premachandra Arthur Kerala said there is growing international interest in the current political chaos on the Indian Ocean island nation, and given its debt and trade dependency, it is crucial Sri Lanka's political leaders resolve their differences sooner rather than later. Coming up, less trash and more sand for an Indian beach. You're listening to VOA Asia.
For more on the stories you've heard on our radio programs, visit our website at voanews.com. That's where you'll find in-depth reports, related stories, videos, and more from our team of correspondents. Or take the news with you by downloading podcasts of your favorite VOA program. That's at voanews.com.
voanews.com.
Online news for a changing world.
This news from VOA Asia, Nissan Chairman Carlos Ghosn was arrested over allegations of financial misconduct Monday. Nissan announced its months-long investigation of Ghosn and plans to dismiss him. The investigation found he had underreported his compensation to Japanese financial authorities for several years. Visit VOA 60 for more and VOA Asia Facebook for more top stories and great features. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, a citizen-led initiative in the Indian city of Mumbai, commended by the United Nations for transforming a garbage-filled beachfront into a pristine shoreline, has inspired other community-led efforts to reclaim more of the city's beaches. Anjana Pasricha joined a group of young volunteers in India's financial capital who have been working for over a year to restore another strip of a sandy shoreline that was buried under plastic and trash.
It's Sunday, the day a group of young volunteers arrive early morning at a once-forgotten beachfront in central Mumbai on a mission to scoop out the trash left behind by citizens or washed up by the sea.
Nobody knows that there is a small, tiny, pretty beach at Dadar. Only the senior citizens who used to be here. The youngsters are not aware of the beach.
The pans of the beach warriors fill up quickly. The laborious cleanup is showing results. More than 60 weeks after it began, the 2-kilometer sandy stretch is again attracting joggers, families, children, and is giving residents a sense of pride.
Till now, we have removed close to 700 tons of garbage from this beach. A lot of people have joined hands with us, and I can truly say that now it has become a movement.
Several of the volunteers come from distant corners to get their hands dirty. They were inspired by a similar effort that has already restored another beach in Mumbai. And after a municipal truck removes the trash, the eyes refocus on the sea and the birds.
When we used to game, there used to be like a layer of plastic completely. Now we can see a better version of it, at least. The view, if you see, exactly, it's a tremendous view. But we don't value this view, so we just wanted to uplift the image of this area.
Gavatra is optimistic that as such initiatives raise consciousness about how plastic is choking the oceans and the earth, future generations will treat the environment with greater care. Although Mumbai enforced a ban on single-use plastic 5 months ago, plastic litter is still commonplace.
Someone if used to come here to throw the garbage, he or she used to throw, and in front of him we used to go there and pick his own garbage. And just to have an eye contact with him, that this thing has done by you and we are picking it up. If you hurt that point of someone, then you can bring definitely the change.
Many citizens who have witnessed the transformation acknowledge the need to do more.
Yes, it's required, it's required. And also the citizens also are involved in the such kind of movement. I think not only NGO, citizens also required to involve in such kind of changes.
That is the aim, to encourage millions living in mega cities like Mumbai to literally take the earth's future in their own hands. Anjana Pasricha for VOA News, Mumbai.
This news from VOA Asia, the prime ministers from Vietnam and Russia have discussed bilateral cooperation, including trade and energy, during Dmitry Medvedev's visit to Hanoi. Trade has increased 30% between the countries since 2016, and the current U.S.-China trade dispute is pushing more business toward Vietnam. VOA Asia Facebook is in business to keep you informed. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, Science in a Minute explores new definitions for weights and measures.
This is Science in a Minute.
What makes a kilogram a kilogram? Since the late 18th century, the standard which a kilogram has been measured has been based on Le Grand K, a chunk of platinum alloy held at the International Bureau of Weights and Measures Laboratory at Sèvres, France. But now a group of delegates representing 60 countries at the 26th General Conference of Weights and Measures have voted to redefine four of the international system of units: the kilogram, the ampere, Kelvin temperature, and the amount of substance known as the mole. Scientists say they use the constants and equations of quantum mechanics to determine the new measurement standards. Rather than base these measurements on archaic standards, they will be defined by natural phenomena, which scientists say will be a million times more stable than artifacts such as Le Grand K. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
If you visited the city of Seattle and the Museum of Pop Culture, it was initially built as a tribute to the legendary Seattle rock musician Jimi Hendrix. The popular attraction now celebrates American contemporary pop culture as a whole. One display is dedicated to the Marvel comic superheroes, whose creator Stan Lee died at the age of 95 earlier this week. Natasha Mozgoyeva visited Washington State as Anna Rice narrates her tour.
From the outside, the Museum of Pop Culture in Seattle has been likened to a smashed electric guitar, a tribute to legendary rock guitarist Jimi Hendrix. The nonprofit museum, founded in 2000 by Microsoft co-founder Paul Allen, is dedicated to all things pop culture, from fantasy and horror movies to comic books and video games. The museum's motto is to explore and support creative works that shape and inspire our lives. Among those works, comic books. An exhibition called Marvel, Universe of Superheroes, is dedicated to the history of comic books and a man who, among others, turned ideas and thoughts into sketches and fun cartoons on paper. Marvel Comics legend Stan Lee, who died at the age of 95 on November 12th.
I think without question, though, for many of the people who come to the exhibition, Spider-Man is tops. Spider-Man's kind of a special superhero because work and he's got to deal with his family, and he's much more relatable, especially for young readers who have their own problems living a teenager's life. He's a little less serious, so he's always making jokes and quips, and he's teasing the villains even as he's fighting them. So he's a very accessible guy.
Based on the same principle, relatability and approachability, another comic book character, Miss Marvel, was created, though she didn't meet the readers until 2016.
So Ms. Marvel is a 16-year-old Pakistani-American. She's a teenager, sort of like Spider-Man. She's trying to balance her home life with her secret identity as a superhero. But the comic also draws in how she has to deal with how she's perceived as a Muslim-American and how she's sort of fighting against certain stereotypes.
Brooks Peck admits that picking showpieces for the exhibition was no easy task.
So although this is the largest exhibition we've ever done, it's about 3,000 square meters, still, Marvel, 80 years, there are literally thousands of superheroes in the Marvel pantheon. So it's not like we could tell every one of those stories. We had to be a little selective, pick and choose, talk about some of the classics, also make room for some of the newcomers and some of the interesting stories that have happened in the 21st century. We know we can't cover it all, but we want to give people a taste, get them into it, and then send them out to explore more Marvel.
And though these hand-drawn characters may be made up, their influence on everyday life and stories about real-life issues continue to attract fans around the world. For Natasha Mozgoyeva in Seattle, Washington, I'm Anna Rice. VOA News.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. You'll find us online at iTunes and SoundCloud, also VOA Asia Facebook, and our website, voanews.com. You'll also find us on the radio, Helps Radio, at Help University in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia. We thank everyone there who's tuned in today. And we send our thanks to Director Tracy Carter, our engineer Ida Nutku, Managing Editor Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team. That's Skylar Ogden, Ira Melman, Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, and Anna Cook. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. Have a great day.